It's time for The Daily Review, a podcast dedicated to reviews and discussion of TV, movies, and books. Look for us at Daily Review on Facebook and Twitter and dailyreview.com on the web. That's DaleyReview.com.
This is Paul Daly here with my wife, Caroline.
Hey, guys.
And today we're here to discuss the second episode of the second season of Netflix's Stranger Things. This one was called Trick or Treat, Freak.
That was funny.
That's how my wife would say freak if she was reading it.
Freak. That is exactly how I say it. That's very true. Very, very true. So this episode had lots going on Halloween, but let's start with some flashbacks that we had for Elle.
I'm sure glad that they showed us these and they showed us what they showed us, because I don't think we need to know much more. I mean, they can tell us a little bit more, but
they did a good job of being real encapsulated. It was like, bam, that's exactly what happened. We know exactly from the moment where we left her in the school all the way till how she got to Hopper's cabin.
What's interesting is how story-wise, timeline-wise, when she comes back out of the upside down through that breach in the high school wall, mm-hmm. right? There's still like bloody drag marks on the floor, which kind of suggests they've taken the bodies, but they haven't had time to clean up yet.
Right.
You know, it makes you think maybe some amount of time has passed, maybe a matter of hours have passed, but not like seconds or minutes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree with that. I would give it hours.
She gets out of there and all she knows how to do is go find Mike. You know, all the authorities are in the Wheeler house, and stupid freaking Ted.
I knew you were going to say Ted.
He really casts a dark shadow on dads because he is so lame.
But does he represent the 80s dad on TV, or is he really supposed to represent like real dads?
I think I've said this before. He kind of reminds me of the dad from War Games. And that dad also was just completely oblivious to everything going on in the world and his family. But also had this sort of like, I'm with you, Ron, sort of approach to the 80s.
But my question is, so are they emulating a media generated dad on War Games? Or are both of those emulating what the real dads were really like in 1980s?
No, I don't know. I had a dad in the 80s and he wasn't like that. He wasn't.
I don't think
like
our
that.
Dads tried that hard. Like, these dads are always trying to like act like they know what's going on. Like, I think our dads are like, I don't know what y'all are up to. You're a bunch of little kids. You know, like, I don't even think they try. And like, Ted tries a little bit in a dorky, terrible way.
Right. Everything.
But he acts like he is cool. And
if
it's
you
like,
catalog
no.
everything that he says, it is 100% wrong, though. You know, everything that he said last season about, oh, they'll never hang out, meaning his son and daughter. Meanwhile, they're together on this adventure. You know?
Right, right.
And this time he says, well, top secret, Patriots first, my family, whatever. It's like, oh, Jesus, dude, you're so lame. You make it hurt to be another dad.
Yeah, he's just super out of touch, right? Very out of touch, but he thinks he's very in touch. That's what I mean. Like, our dads didn't even pretend like they were in touch. I mean, they were like, I have no idea what you're talking about over there. I don't know if my kids hang out. Like, I just don't even know.
I was trying to think through that part of the flashback to figure out the realisticness of it, in that about a few hours prior to this, they were in your house ransacking the place, telling you that your kid is tied up with a criminal, right? And then something bad happens and you get your kid back, and these same people come into your house, ransack it again, and start telling you that you need to keep super quiet about this whole thing. If I was sitting there, I would feel a lot like, because you'll get in a lot of trouble, isn't that right? If I say anything, you'll be in a lot of trouble.
But I don't think that was the mindset. I think that that's the mindset now with like social media and the way that we all feel like we have a voice. Like, if you wanted to say something anytime, you could literally feel like you're standing on a mountaintop with a bullhorn and tell the whole world something in one tweet. But that wasn't the case back in the 80s. I mean, people didn't have that level of like, I'm so important and my voice will be heard kind of feeling, you know? So I don't think they felt like there was anyone to tell. Who would you tell? It's the government, Paul. The government's in charge.
If you were Karen Wheeler, wouldn't it feel fishy to you that these same people...
Yeah, but it's a different time. Like, I don't remember my parents having like all this, you know, let's be concerned about the government doing something bad to us. I mean, now I feel like everyone's like, what are they putting in our water? What are they putting in our food? What are they doing? You know, and for good reasons. I mean, I'm not saying it's like paranoia. I'm saying that we've uncovered and realized over the last, 30 years from when the show was supposed to be made, that maybe the government shouldn't be blindly trusted. And so, but I think our parents trusted the government. I don't think that they questioned it in the same way. I know that there was like in the 70s, our parents like questioned things like, going to war and policy having to do with Vietnam and stuff like that. But I mean, in that whole like the government's out to get you kind of way that people feel now.
Right. We're the,
We didn't grow up feeling that way with like Reagan and stuff like that.
No, we're the WikiLeaks era.
Yeah. So we're just, I think we're just coming at it from a whole different angle. So I don't know. I would be curious to know if people much, much younger than us relate to this blind trust and would be like, mom, dad, why, you guys wouldn't go along with this, but our moms and dads would. I felt like Eleven's state of mind when she was at the Wheelers and realizing she had like nowhere to run to was so fragile. Like, watching her go through everything in the woods and, having that flashback scene with the squirrel and the throwing the squirrel against the tree and everything, like it was so like brutal, and like raw.
I think now what she's gone through, both with seeing everything with her, the man she called Papa last season, and everything she had to do to protect her friends, even though she is wildly naive about how the world around her works, she knows a little bit, and she knows she can trust one person. She can kind of trust his friends, but that is it, and she's going to be very decisive about. As the flashbacks progress, we can see that she's very, like you said, brutal when it comes to that guy.
And just raw, like just immediate knee-jerk reaction kind of stuff.
The way that that man acted, that hunter, could you figure out whether or not he was going to be an asset or a problem to Eleven if he had just been allowed to run his course?
I really read him as a threat. And
he looked rapey to me.
He did. And kind of like aggressive in a way that he didn't have that, like, are you okay? What are you doing? It was more like, what are you doing out here? Like, it was way more aggressive for me. So I definitely read it like she did. Like, this guy is not going to be my friend, no matter what. And you can say he would have physically attacked her. But I also kind of wonder if it was like he wasn't even like a kid person, like he was just going to yell at her.
Or other stuff. I mean, but I thought that it was really, if you go back and watch it objectively, you could argue it either way, that the man was just being very leery about approaching this.
Yeah, and he was hunting. So, I mean, what a dangerous place to be. I mean, she was running around in an area where they were shooting guns. I mean, that's not safe. So, maybe it's appropriate for him to be kind of little like that angry dad kind of like, what are you doing out here kind of feeling, because like, yeah, you could get hurt and I could have shot you,
And maybe there's another element of, I mean, yes, she needed his coat, but when adults get too close to her, bad things happen to those adults too.
Very true. Very true.
So, she knocks him out, takes the coat, and the next time we see her, she is evolved. She's carrying around animal skins and stuff to suggest that she's very at home and comfortable in her wilderness
skills. Yeah.
Life. Were you happy to see? I mean, you could tell what was going to happen because we knew Hopper left out the food. But at the same time, were you happy to see her take the food? And
oh, yeah. I mean, I was like, yay. I mean, it was the moment when it married last season to this season. It was like exactly where we left him was, leaving those Eggo waffles. So then when she saw the Eggo waffles in there, it was like, okay, now I get it. Like the Legos clicked together. Like now I see how the story flowed.
Personally, I don't need to see between finding the Eggo waffles and then finding Hopper.
No.
Okay, that's what I was about to ask.
I don't need to see that because I just assume that one of these times
Hopper will be there.
Yeah, or he's going to leave some additional instructions like, meet me at a cabin or here's the, something additional that somehow he got more information or. But I agree with you. I don't need to know. And obviously he taught her Morse code. So then it's like, oh, okay, they've really been working on trying to communicate back and forth, first just with a waffle, an Eggo waffle. Like, that's good enough, to start there.
And things have moved on to French toast.
Uh-huh.
Now that they have kind of rapport built up, it's not exactly daddy-daughter, but it's close.
I think it's like guardian. It's very guardian. Like, he is worried about her safety, but he isn't looking at it like he's raising her. He's looking at it like he's keeping her safe, but
There's no educational plan or long-term thinking, exactly.
Or even thinking about, like, what am I doing? Is there any harm in keeping her isolated here, kind of thing? Which you would, like, think about if you were worried about raising her long-term. But just, like, immediate safety needs is, like, where he's at still. Even though this is obviously, you know, you could tell by her hair and stuff sometime later.
Would you have let her go E.T. style trick-or-treating?
No, I'm with them on what he's saying about, like, it's just too much of a risk. I feel like she almost, like, puts out some sort of, like, field of energy around her in a way that's, like, I don't think that it's about a visual in capturing her again. I think it's something that they have some other equipment that they wouldn't need her to be visually available to them. Like, if she's walking around with the crowd, she might, like, stick out like a sore thumb to their equipment. So I would be too afraid that there's other things around her that we can't see and that would somehow set off some sort of buzzer for them. And it's too high risk. What, for a candy bar? I mean,
right.
This is too high risk. This isn't worth it. I thought that him agreeing to be home for Halloween, though, and, like, watching a movie with her, I thought that was, like, a fair compromise. And it was super disappointing when he got stuck with the investigation of the decaying crops that he ended up being late.
It was foreseeable, unfortunately.
It was. Because you kind of knew when they were saying, like, the 5:15 and all that stuff, it was like, oh, man, this is feeling bad. Like, he's going to let her down. And, you know, what a difficult spot. You know, Eleven is already really, like you said, only trusted Mike the whole time. And so now it's like Hopper is, I don't really feel like she trusts him in the way of, like, whatever you say will definitely happen, like Mike, you know? I think it's like, I'm wary of you, but you, you know, generally meet all my needs. So then, you know, and you're not going to try to kill me. So,
yeah.
But that's a pretty low bar for a friend these days.
What she has going for her from him is that I think he feels like he owes her one, like a big one.
For saving Will.
Right.
Certainly.
For trading her for Will, basically. Right.
Exactly. I agree with you. What do you think is going on with this decayed crop situation?
I think that it is totally tied in to Will's visions, that we are getting hints here and there that the Upside Down is starting to encroach outside of Hawkins Lab's basement into other areas. And we have seen that this big monster thing, and he's very big, and I imagine that even if he is in the Upside Down, when he comes walking around, maybe the crossover or the breach is so flimsy right now that when he's doing his walking in the Upside Down, it affects stuff over here and his touch is poison.
Yeah. And I definitely took it, like, back to our Stephen King nods that, like, the ground's gone sour. I mean, right. I took that very literally, like, the ground's gone sour. I mean, look, everything is, like, literally rotting and decaying, like you put poison. But even more than that, it's not just like poison, like it's dead. It's like carcasses. It's like this really, like, something sucked the life out of it.
Well, and we get that on the trees, especially the trees. We get that organic mucusy goo.
That would be very familiar to Hopper, obviously. I mean, right. He has to know. When he was touching the tree, I mean, like, he had to know.
He was in the Upside Down.
Yes.
I mean, he walked
through the goo. Yeah. Right. I mean, like, he's got to know. I thought that it was, like, a nice comic relief moment when he's like, don't touch it. And then they show the other officer and he's, like, over there, like, licking and smelling and stuff. It's like, oh, no.
Yeah.
It was like, wah.
That guy's not going to have a long law enforcement career.
Those two always make me laugh. I love them. And the whole, you know, the whole parts of having the farmers come to the police department and say, you know, like, I think that this guy's doing it to me, and the other guy saying, no, I think he did it to me, and, you know, going back and forth and realizing again, like, how we talked about last week, like, part of Hopper's role is to take this very surreal, insane circumstances and then see how, like, the regular population is trying to make excuses for these things and come up with, like, oh, it's a rift between two farmers and that's why the crops are all ruined, you know? And it's like, he can't, like, exactly, like, act like that's not real. Like, he can't say, no, that's not it, you guys. I mean, he almost has to play along, like, yeah, maybe the farmers are poisoning each other, even though he knows it's not, because he has to come up with other stories in the real world to cover what could be happening while he's investigating. And I think that's why they let him in on those lab conversations. You know, when we were saying last week, like, why would they let him go in with Will? I think it's partially to act as damage control in the real world.
Yeah, it's probably just part of his deal.
I think so. I definitely think so. So when he is so late coming home, 11 kind of acts out about it. She does not let it go unnoticed.
You have to like this kid's spunk, don't you? I mean, she can work the lock telekinetically, which tells me that she is working on her control in a big way. Otherwise, you wouldn't use it so much if it hurt. You know what I mean? But the more exposure she gets to it, I think the less it hurts and the more control she gets. And being able to do something tiny, teeny, like, you know, if you think about if you were to all of a sudden become telekinetic, being able to just push somebody, that feels like, okay, that's pretty easy. But turn a lock, just tick, you know, that seems like takes little kids a long time to do that with their fingers, you know?
Yeah. Well, she's got like honed skills.
I believe she does have higher skills than we last saw her.
So what do you think about her coping mechanism?
Do you mean locking herself in the room or do you mean going to
blindfolding herself and going to go see Mike?
It's sweet in its way. Because it seems like these two, even though they're very young, have some kind of connection that is meant to bring them together in a big way.
I could see that. And I mean, I know how they're saying that these are supposed to go, we think, like 5 seasons.
Yeah.
So 3 years from now, when they're like 17, this could be much, much more interesting in that way.
And appropriate to have those sorts of connections then.
Right.
But right now, it's just more like...
I think it's just friendship. I think it's just a connection, you know?
She misses him, uh-huh. for one. He is actively trying to find her, and he is... I don't know how the upside down works exactly, but she knows where to look to find him.
She does. It's so weird. It is weird.
What was interesting about that scene was wondering whether or not she still had that ability to communicate over the walkie-talkie, but just chose not to.
Yes, I think not to, because I think that she's not supposed to reach out.
Well, on the night you get betrayed, if you were going to
freak out, this might be a good one.
But she did not.
Well, so let's talk about what day this is. This is Halloweener. And we start off with such a great montage of all the boys putting on their Ghostbusters outfits and all the moms, including Lucas's mom and sister, who this is the first time we saw any amount of Lucas family at all. And so that was like awesome. It answered a lot of people's questions about what do all of their mothers look like and everything.
Yeah, they're all dorks.
Oh, come on. What do you mean? They're all just moms. They're like silly, fun moms, right?
With their flash cubes. Yes.
Well, I mean, that's the...
And Polaroids. Very 80s stuff. Very
technology of the day.
Fits together very well.
For sure. And so I thought it was so cute. And that whole conversation about how many Venkmans there were going to be.
That was pretty awesome. I mean, that was more of a modern type argument than you might find in the 80s. But... still, these days, characters are characters. And really, unless you're trying to do some sort of specific thing with period influences or something like that, then you should be able to write a part and have it have any ethnicity play it. But that's not the way things were in the 80s. You had a black character, you had a black character. And that's, I mean, Mike didn't want to say it. But that's what it was boiling down to in his mind.
Well, yeah, and for sure. And I think that, you know, we are trying to get better as the TV industry in representing all types of diversity. But they hit the nail on the head. Like, they're like, Winston joined the team late, wasn't a scientist. As a character, he was not as developed as everybody else by far. And so, like, why would you want to dress up and be him, you know, simply because of the color of your skin? So I thought that was cool to point out at this point, because there's plenty of kids now who are like, I do see black characters, Asian characters, Hispanic characters on TV. If you were young, you might not realize how fresh and new that really is.
It reminds me of friends of ours whose daughter was super into Doctor Who for a little while and even went as Doctor Who for Halloween. Now, Doctor Who only became female like in the upcoming version of Doctor Who. Never been female before, but that didn't matter to her because she just saw like this character that she really liked.
Yeah. So like gender didn't really matter as much. And it's not like she dressed like a man. She dressed like herself as Doctor Who.
Right.
That's an important kind of distinction, that it wasn't that she thought she needed to be a man to be Doctor Who. She could just be herself and be Doctor Who.
So that's what I mean. Like, it's sort of a modern outlook on that particular problem with the two Venkmans. Very, very funny, though.
Very good. Very. I love those. I mean, the realistic dialogue that they have in the show, I mean, is the mainstay of the great laughs and the realistic feel to it, the nostalgic feel to it. We would have had those conversations.
Speaking of nostalgia, do you remember that feeling that first time you went to school and no one was dressing up for Halloween anymore, and just like how not fun and needlessly adult it felt like?
I definitely feel like there was that time, because in like elementary school, when I was still there, I mean, we still had like the Halloween parade. You know, where like all the way into like fifth grade, where like everyone wore their costume and you're like, dee, 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 and everyone like marches around the playground and gets to see everyone else's in these little parade lines and stuff. Like, it's really funny. And moms come and take pictures and stuff. So, yeah, all of a sudden you go to middle school and it'd be like, yeah, we don't do that anymore. It's kind of like, ooh.
And it'd be a complete lie, because most of your friends still had costumes that they were going to go and trick or treat with.
And not only that, but it's like this weird hole, void in the Halloween celebration, because everyone from birth up until like fifth grade dresses up. And then adults dressed up. They went to, and even teenagers, they were going to parties and they were dressing up and they were going to stuff. And so it's like there was just this void of like only middle school has to act like we aren't that silly. Yeah. We are serious and you will take us seriously.
I knew it was bullshit at the time, and I saw it being bullshit for our four friends here who showed up.
Poor guys. That
didn't get the memo that nobody else is dressing up.
Such a terrible feeling, right?
Yes.
So I appreciated that they went ahead and just went with it. They didn't go change clothes or call their moms or anything. Like, I thought it was funny and cool. And even, you know, this whole next portion where Dustin and Lucas are going to get up the guts to go talk to Max and invite her trick-or-treating, which I actually thought was very nice. Like, I don't know if you have to look at that like they're like kind of hitting on her or like trying to get her romantically, but more like I hope that some part of them being like, you are the new kid, and you know, we thought we'd invite you trick-or-treating. Like, I thought some of that was actually real.
Yeah, but if one thing led to another, they wouldn't, you know, be like, hey, we were just doing this as friends.
Well, who wins, Lucas or Dustin?
Max looks definitely like Friendville for life for those two.
You think so?
Yeah, that's my
guess. I think Lucas could be more boyfriend material because he's more serious and stuff. And I think the goofy, doofus personality of Dustin is like fun as a sidekick friend. But I don't know about much more. As I've been told, silly is not sexy.
Who would tell you such a mean spirit?
Who does tell me stuff like that?
Thing like that. So are we supposed to think Dustin is not bright? I mean, he's the guy that figured out the compass thing last year. But on the other hand, he didn't know the word presumptuous was not a compliment when Max said it.
That was so funny. But you know what? We've all been in that position. And that's like what I think, again, that they do at this show so well, where it's like we've all been there, all of us, where someone says something and you're like sheer, not even realizing like they've just insulted you and you've just nodded along, you know, because you don't want to say like, I'm sorry, what are you talking about? You know?
Yeah.
But, and we've all been there, even as adults, you know, it's not even like a kid thing or not being a bright thing. It's like, maybe you didn't hear them correctly, but they really did just say something bad about you, but you just smile and nod. And it's like, oh my God. And especially, I mean, I've never been in the position of asking someone out in a way like this, but as a guy, I would think talking to a girl, almost anything she says, you're like,
anything besides no. Right?
Yeah. I mean, you're just like nodding. It reminds me of, we just watched that David S. Pumpkins cartoon, and he's like, the cartoon boy is like trying to be cool with a girl. And she's like, you know, oh, what are you going to be for Halloween? He goes, I'm a tutu boy. Like, it just crap comes out that you don't mean to say because you're just all awkward and everything, you know?
Toot toot boy. Anyway,
that's a house. He goes, and he goes, that's a house. I mean, it's like, and he's like supposed to be their same age, like, you know, just the first year of not trick or treating, that kind of thing. So super funny, always good with the Dustin comic relief. What do you make of this Max character, generally speaking? Like, she obviously has this super jerk brother.
I'm not sure what they're gonna bring. I mean, obviously,
you keep calling her Yoko, so.
Yeah, well, I mean, during the whole Halloween thing,
she didn't Yoko that group, I don't think, at Halloween. I thought that the boys' like ignorance to one another's agendas was more the problem. Because, I mean,
you're overthinking it from the boy point of view.
No, I mean,
she shows up, Mike gets sick of her antics and just wants to bolt, and does.
But what do you mean by antics? Like, what did she do? I thought they were just going to go trick-or-treating.
Yeah, but I mean, it wasn't, then it wasn't the four friends.
It going trick or treating. It was more about focused on Max.
Yeah. Because she did have antics. She didn't, I mean, she came.
Yeah, she scared them.
Scared them and she kidded around with them and insulted them and did a lot of normal kid stuff. Mike wasn't having it. At least he wasn't in the mood that night.
Yeah, which is totally understandable. This was a difficult night. But what do you think about Max generally? Like, what is going on? Why are they in Hawkins? We had that whole scene with the brother being all mad, taking off like crazy and almost hitting the boys on that road. And him being like, yeah, why are we in Hawkins? Like, in, you know, sort of intimating like something she did made them have to come here.
What could that even be?
I don't know. What is their business here?
And why is it that the brother seems in charge of her? Because he's going to high school too. So,
right.
So he can't be like a guardian, you know?
I don't know.
So any way you cut it, Max and her brother represent just one of the minor new mysteries introduced this season that will go along with whatever the big mysteries are. We'll solve this one probably in a few episodes. We'll get a little more details, but it's obviously not the big deal that we're supposed to care about this season.
Do you think that Barb's parents and everything that's going on with like Nancy and Steve and being so upset and worked up about like, how are we going to keep this from Barb's parents? And, you know, do you think that that's going to be a pretty big mystery?
Well, we'll talk about the Halloween party a little more thoroughly in a minute, but I'm starting to think Nancy's going to crack.
I think she is, too. And I definitely see her, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, to watch Barb's parents sell their life away in order to figure something out that you already know the answer to. I mean, that would be heartbreaking for anybody.
But, I mean, we can go and talk about the Halloween party since we're going to talk about Nancy a little bit here. But, I mean, she's not totally convinced that she's gone, is she?
I don't know. I mean, I think that, you know, that little blip in the library, obviously she feels like, you know, the presence of Barb is like haunting her. Clearly, you know, she is very resentful between Steve and herself and the fact that they were off together, you know, when everything happened with Barb. And, you know, it's all so painful for her that I think there's like lingering hope, but I don't know that it's like rational, conscious hope or just like subconscious, I so wish there was some way to fix this kind of sadness.
I mean, if I was her and I had the word of a strange little girl I met one night that just disappeared after that, I might also have my doubts. But then again, I mean, that night was revolving around that of those days when she would have actually have just been in the upside down via that tree portal.
Right.
So, you know, things... I on the one hand, if it was just any little girl, I'd be like, well, you know, whatever, little girls don't know anything. But then with everything else she saw, because she did see the Demogorgon and ran away.
Exactly. And I think that in addition to that, I mean, why would we think that the rules would be the same as our rules in our world? Like, so maybe Barb did die in the upside down. Does that really mean she has to be dead in our world? I don't know. You know, like the rules of the upside down haven't been explained in such a way that if you were Nancy, you could easily make up some. Yeah, what if there's another rule? What if it's like after, you know, 1 year they come back? Or what if it's, you know, you could make up reasons why, even though 11 could have been truthful and the upside down could have some weird loopholes.
Well, it is interesting whether or not the upside down is a black mirror reflection of our world, or is it some sort of weird copy of our world? You know what I mean?
Okay, expand on that.
Well, if it was this Black Mirror thing, wouldn't there be Black Mirror copies of ourselves over there too?
I don't know. I mean, this is a complicated concept. That's why I think it like leaves the door open with Nancy. Because like we don't really know what the other world is, and we certainly don't know, you know, why should anything act the same way over there. You know, it's called the upside down. Maybe it's, you know, opposite day, you know, things that are dead or can be alive over here. You know, who knows? I don't know.
It'd be great to get a
and
little
Will
bit more.
Will came back.
That.
I mean, Will came back. And I think that's the main thing. If I was her, I would be like, Will came back. You know,
that's what makes me think like maybe it's not a reflection as much as it's somehow our world was copied to this other place and it's not supposed to actually exist. And that's why it's all screwed up. you know,
because interesting.
So, but that means that since it's a copy, that my theory is that then there's only one of everything, you know. So it's like with people and demogorgons and elephant monsters, there's one. And so if you come from that world to this world, then that one of you goes to that world. And then that's the one in that world, or that's the one for all worlds. You know what I mean?
I don't know anything. I feel, I mean, I'm like listening to you and I'm like, yes, that's possibly, but I don't know. I mean, I know there's also this concept of like parallel universes. And
we've been watching a lot of Rick and Morty.
Well, yes, but I already knew about parallel universes prior to Rick
before
and Morty.
The Citadel of Ricks.
A little bit more into the science than just old Rick and Morty cartoon based science. But, no, but just the idea that, you know, that everybody, that there's like just this like fraction of difference, you know, and we have these parallel universes, and that's why, you know, you can have the thing like
you're
the,
explaining to me parallel universes.
No, Weenus.
Please go on.
Damn it, man. Just freaking give me a minute.
Would you like to explain superpowers
give
next?
Give me a friggin' millisecond. All right. No, all I'm saying is that things like, you know, where people say the whole thing with like Nelson Mandela, the Mandela effect, and, you know, the idea of parallel universes, and people can all have these collective ideas of things that they thought all happened, and it's like everyone was wrong, and how could that happen? Well, what if there was like slices in time and we actually are living in parallel universes, and those things did happen in the one universe and didn't in another, but there's like this mix up of information sometimes. I don't know. All I'm saying is that I would hold my little hope that maybe Barb is still alive. I know everyone said Barb is dead. I also know this is season 1.5 and they want to go for 5. So never say never when it comes to sci-fi.
We saw a body. That's where I'm at. We saw a body.
In sci-fi, it doesn't matter because maybe they develop some sort of, you know, potion that Eleven can go on the other side, find the carcass, pour the magic potion on, and she's totally Barb 2.0 now with bigger abdomen.
Right.
You don't know. I'm just saying, like, staying open. Let's talk a little bit about Steve and Nancy at that party. I mean, I felt like what happened was pretty predictable. You know, I mean, Nance was going to take it to the nth degree on like, yeah, we're supposed to act like normal teenagers. We'll watch how normal I'm going to be. And then she like, you know, lashes out. Jonathan bailing on the trick-or-treat situation where he's supposed to be monitoring Will and instead going and creeping the party. That is like, you know, I'm a freaking Kreskin on that one because that's so predictable, right? Of course Jonathan was going to show up at that party.
Also, on the predictable scale, do you think Steve and Maxine's brother are cruising for a bruising?
I do. Yes, I do think there's going to be fisticuffs.
What did you think of the little thing with Samantha, the girl who was interested in talking to Jonathan?
Oh, you know what? I have a vibe that that's going to turn out to be one of those things like Carrie and Pig's Blood. I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I think Samantha, it would be great if there could be a new love interest for Jonathan, but I don't know. I get the vibe like she could be somebody who's going to like lure him into something that's just going to end up being embarrassing for him, you know?
Mm.
They're going to tease him.
You think the show has time for side trails like that?
We spent the entire last season with Jonathan spray paint and fist fights in the alley and stuff. Like, I don't think all of a sudden he's going to become like a cool guy that girls want.
Mm.
I don't think. Maybe, but I don't think. I'd like to hold on to some idea that maybe Jonathan does get a love life.
Well, you know, he seems like his little heart is set on Nancy.
Yeah. So as soon as I saw that white sweater on Nancy and I saw that red punch, I thought, oh, 1 + 1 = disaster here.
If anyone out there in the fandom can tell us who were they supposed to be dressed up as, that would be a big help because we're 80s people of the 80s from the 80s and we have no idea.
I don't know. At least, well, I haven't done any research or tried to exactly figure it out, but it should have been on site. We should have figured out who they were.
Uh-huh.
If it's something like, oh, they're supposed to be Molly Ringwald or something, whatever. There was not enough of a good costume, especially because they claim to have worked on their costume. So yeah. I'm like, confusing. So anyway, you guys, the idea that Jonathan comes to the party, they end up getting into this argument between Nancy and Steve, and Jonathan ends up taking her home all drunkified and putting her in bed. That was like such a deja vu from putting her in bed from Upside Down.
And dude, I mean, Jonathan's restraint is got to be just, he's got to get a blue ribbon for that. I mean, not doing anything ungentlemanly with her. I mean, I guess that's the expected behavior, but it's happened so little, you know, and from TV people.
Dang.
You know what I mean? So
I guess I'm giving you big eyes over there because I'm like, oh, geez. I mean, I think he really cares about her. I think he hopes that he could be her husband, not like this is supposed to be.
I wasn't like suggesting like cop a feel. I was just.
Oh, I thought that's exactly what you're saying.
No, I don't think that's Jonathan's speed. But you know, like a kiss on the forehead or something like that.
Oh, sure.
I mean, nothing. He did nothing.
That's true.
Nothing.
A kiss on the forehead wouldn't even have been shocking, honestly. It would have been like, okay.
But still, yeah. Probably more familiar than they are.
No, yeah, you're totally right. I mean, I think that he did the right thing. Although, what do you think? Did he do the right thing about not staying with Will?
Well, right is tough to manage here because Will was going to be with his friends, so he did have eyes on him. But then, you know, your mom basically told you you're in charge of him. So it's not really up to a teenager to then reassign, you know, sublet his responsibility to tweens.
I just think it's too soon. I mean, it's just too soon. He's, you know, a zombie kid, you know, that Jonathan was supposed to have been watching him that one morning. And he's off doing something else with the photography. And then Will's like missing. I mean, there's just too much guilt that an average person would carry around that they would like never let him out of their sight, you know?
He wouldn't have made it to the party, but he could have given
not true.
Will his breathing room.
Not even true, because the party is a party. What time do you think it ended? I'm sure it went to at least midnight.
That's and true. And
trick-or-treating the little is kids like were done by like 9 o'clock. They were done. So, I mean, you know, it kind of seems like, I don't know. It seems like you could have done both. Well, I can just say this. If I was Joyce and I had opted to stay home with Bob handing out candy, I think I'd be pretty pissed that Jonathan decided to sublet his responsibilities to others.
Why is that? You don't like Bob? You don't like hanging around with the Bobster?
Oh, no. I just mean that she chose to be with Bob, which I think is kind of questionable. And we do have some question marks about Bob. She's so nerved up about Will and Will's having these terrible kind of PTSD moments right now that I kind of feel like Bob should have been like, you should be with Will, you know, like that kind of thing. But
what do you think about Bob's proposal? Regardless of whether or not we think he's a plant from the government or whatever, what do you think of his proposal of moving to Maine?
I was really surprised, and it seemed like it super came out of the blue, although I'll give that another nod to Stephen King.
Right, exactly right.
Of all the places he could choose.
If you don't know, Stephen King both lives in Maine, has always lived in Maine, and bases most of his stories in Maine.
So it doesn't seem like it would be a good idea for the buyers to move to Maine. Seems like that'd be a great way to get a clown after them.
Right, very much so. But on the other hand, why do you think she feels tied to Hawkins? Is it just the Hawkins lab stuff? Because there's some part of me as a parent that would be like, having my traumatized kid around the area where he was traumatized, maybe that's doing more harm than good, you know?
Well, so it was interesting because Joyce and Hopper have a conversation at one point where, you know, they're talking about having both smoked, you know, under the stairs in high school and stuff. So clearly Joyce has grown up there, as did Hopper, and she's got a long history. So it makes sense to me that, you know, she, exactly her reasoning of this is my home, this is where we're from, that stuff makes sense. But also Hopper said stuff about, like, you know, doctors in Chicago, doctors in other places. And so it sounded like they did take Will other places, and that maybe Hawkins has proved to be the place that maybe provides some amount of more accurate information, Joyce feels, or at least maybe listens to their stories more, than takes them more seriously than other doctors. And things like that, I think, would color your decision to like stay where people actually know what really happened and actually believe you. And treat with some respect rather than trying to go to a new place and try to find some people who would listen to you.
What about all of the other townspeople that think they're full of shit? Because that seems to be part of it too.
It seems like though that the buyers were always the black sheep. So I don't know that this new layer to them is like that much more embarrassing or upsetting than, you know, I mean, they stared at Joyce before, you know, thinking she was like crap. So I don't know.
Clean slate would be very attractive to me, I think.
I think it would, except for that Will is still sick and he still needs care. Like, you're still having to pick him up from school early and he's still having these episodes. And so in that case, well, what would you do for care?
Well, maybe Maine is too far. Maybe Ohio.
Maybe the next town over.
Good. Right, right.
I mean, that's possible, right? There must be like a Woodbury.
Well, I'm pretty sure the town over heard the news, though.
Yeah, no shit, right? Yeah. Well, I don't know. Who knows what anybody knows, you know? Just that a kid...
It was on the news, so...
Yeah, I wonder. I wonder how they explain that stuff away. It's a real curiosity. Okay, so let's get down to the trick-or-treating evening that really was a huge chunk of this entire episode.
It started out with the four boys, and then they were quickly joined by Max, which was very interesting... dynamic, right? Because it does show that our boys are kind of reaching that age
where they're growing up,
where they're finding, you know, girls aren't gross after all. So what do you think? Do you think Max adds to the group, or do you think she Yoko Ono's the group?
I think that it is very understandable that they would get to a point where Mike and Will went through a whole lot more than Dustin and Lucas did. Dustin and Lucas were very much a part of it, but they were still more periphery, where like Mike and Will, obviously Will, good Lord, you know, they were all in. And so I think that watching these after effects, you know, kids are very resilient. And I think Lucas and Dustin kind of want to move on. It doesn't necessarily have to have been a girl, but I think just the idea maybe it would have been going out for a sport or moving on to some other interest, generally speaking. And, you know, that Will and Mike would still very much be entrenched in dealing with what happened. I love, after Will's really upsetting freak out there, when Mike took Will back to his house and Mike said, you know, if you're going crazy, then we'll go crazy together. That's one of the like sweetest lines that kind of anybody could ever say to somebody else, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know, if this is happening, we're going to do it together. That's like, oh my gosh. So I think that their shared experiences are going to dictate everything. I think that Dustin and Lucas, although they were physically there, didn't go through as much. And so it's always, that would have always started to be like a fork in the road.
Okay, I can see that.
But I mean, do I think that it had to be Max? Max? No, but I think that it's reasonable that a girl, just anything that would have been like, we don't have to focus on what happened last year. We can move on. Something would have caused that.
Okay.
Max is just the catalyst.
Now, I don't know about you, but when I was a little kid, or their age, kind of on that almost out of the trick-or-treating phase until your high school trick-or-treating renaissance
kicks
in.
Right, right, right. After you have, you're like, wait a minute, I only have like one more second to do this.
Yeah. I remember discussions about candy that made it sound like we were trading gold bars.
I 100% remember doing that thing where you go back to the house and you like dump out your pillowcase and you like sort it into different piles. And there's a lot of like negotiating for like, how many Twix will you give me for this bit of honey? Like all that kind of business. Yeah.
Well, and also,
there's a hierarchy.
The relative value of one candy to another.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? I mean, I know you're talking about Dustin and like his nougat love.
Yeah, that particular conversation. I didn't have that conversation exactly, but I'm positive I had ones like it.
Oh, I'm 100% positive. And I'm pretty sure that the nougat factor, seems to me like an adult acquired taste kind of thing. Whereas, you know, some other things like just plain chocolate or just sugar, you know, just licorice and stuff.
I'm with
like
Lucas. Nougat's just like filler to me. Just like candy bar filler.
It is candy bar filler, literally.
But in the same way that, you know, foam fills mattresses or something, you know, like not.
What's your top three?
My top three?
Yeah, what's your top three?
Let's see. I'd go with like a Heath bar.
Oh.
a just plain Hershey's with almonds.
Oh, that's a very adult. That's not a kid one.
And Butterfinger.
Nice. Nice. Quality.
Mm-hmm. What about you?
I was a Kit Kat, a Twix, and I actually kind of dug the Bit of Honeys and stuff like that. Those kind of like more like, you only get those at like Halloween. Like they don't show up any other time.
I thought we were
talking
about candy bars.
Oh, I'm just talking about candy.
Oh, okay. I was just...
Do you have got another candy that you enjoy?
I'll if I notice a Bit of Honey laying around, I'll snatch it up.
Now you're like, wait a minute, I kind of am up on that Bit of Honey. Well, now I know. Christmas is coming.
Oh, and you know, orange slices, of course.
Oh my gosh, that's our road trip food for
right. Pop. Concentrated citric acid and
so you always get the candied orange slices, and what do I always get?
You enjoy red Twizzlers.
I do. And a particular chip.
Pringles.
Sour cream and onion. Yep, those are our because that like fits so neatly in the cup holder in the car for road tripping it.
So if you want to get the daily review any last
snackety
second
snack.
Gifts, you know what to send us.
Secret Santa. Okay, so we've got to talk about how that evening ends with Dustin heading back to his house.
Yeah, Mike and Will have already paired off and gone back to the Wheeler's house, where apparently the parents aren't paying attention to shit, because Jonathan has come in with Nancy and Mike has come in with Will, and we haven't seen a single parent yet. Lucas, we've never seen his home life, so that's not unusual that we don't see anything about him. So Dustin, though, there was a little rattle in the trash can earlier in the episode, or maybe it was even the prior episode. And then tonight we see that he takes the lid off the garbage can and there's something in there. The way that he seemed to recognize something about it, I think he saw some upside down monster in there. What do you think he saw?
It reminded me of like Batteries Not Included. Do you remember when the little like beepity flying monsters, like they get like a robot things. Remember they get like stuck in like in something like a garbage can and someone like opens it and they kind of fly out like almost like a bee. It like reminded me of something like that. So, I mean, the way that they left it, it can't be just like one of those things where it's like, you know, like a shock scare kind of thing where, you know, it was like the phone ringing. You're supposed to be like, oh, you know, like, I mean, he took it off and went like, holy shit, like it. And it ended the episode. So, like, yeah. It has to be something. It can't be, like, a raccoon.
No.
Or, you know, right, a possum eating a pizza. Like, I mean, it could have been any of those things had they just shown it. And then it would have been like, oh, ha, ha, ha. Like, almost like I was scared and now I'm not.
Right.
But the fact that they left off at that, I mean, it has to be something.
I think so, too.
I mean, it could just be as simple as like some sort of like goo in there that he recognizes and you can't actually see the monster. I don't know.
And now that we're about to finish this podcast, we get to go find out.
I know. I cannot wait. So you guys hang on for episode 3. We will get it out as soon as possible. Thanks for listening.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Catch us on iTunes or your preferred podcast software. Our website, dailyreview.com. That's D-A-L-E-Y review.com. Facebook or Twitter. Or wherever you find us, please leave us a comment and a rating to let us know what you think of the show.
Thanks for listening, pod people. Thanks for listening to my mom and dad.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. Just go home, folks.